Welcome to the Developer Tribe, where we delve into the process and practice of coaches, educators, and beyond. Today, in episode 8 of season 3, we're talking about coach education in football, higher education, and the female coaching pathway. Similar to last week, this was recorded a while ago, but now ready to bring to you to listen. As always, thanks for being here, however you got here, and with that, let's jump in. My guest today is a senior lecturer of football and coaching science at Wrexham Glyndŵr University, coach educator with the FAW Trust, and previously football coach with Connors Quay Nomads FC and Crewe Alexandra FC. Following a second injury in the States, she hung up her boots, became a cabin crew, and started the coach education pathway. Following completion of a degree, Glyndŵr announced a new football-specific degree for which she was perfectly positioned to teach on. 5 years later, and she runs the course. A big welcome to the pod for Sarah Hilton.
Sounds strange hearing all that back all in one go.
what's going on for you at the moment?
Obviously, it's a busy time of year now for us within HE. Deadlines approaching, a lot of marking to be done. So kind of heading into that part of the year now. I'm an external examiner for other universities as well. So kind of add to my workload with all that, but yeah really good. It's nice to finally have the sun shining and people getting back to the sport, back to football, so a bit of normality resuming hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone's after the same thing there, and the area of North Wales is I have a strong link with that, as my father is from Llangollen, and actually my great uncle played for Wrexham for many years. So unfortunately, I've not seen the area too much, but it looks like it's sunny there.
Yeah, it's not too bad. The been a bit of a strange weekend. We've had a bit of snow in addition to the sun. So, all nice today.
I'll ask you a personal question here about your injuries, because I'm interested in that for several reasons. One, I had an ACL injury, as did my older brother. But working in female football as I do, I have experienced, literally been there when it's happened, and come across many players who have had ACL injuries, and it's so common in the female game. Do you think you'd be in a very different place if you hadn't had those injuries?
Yeah, I think, in some ways it's kind of, there's a lot of acceptance that goes in when you experience those injuries and the trajectory of your life and the way where you think you're going as a career kind of rapidly changes. And obviously you mentioned in the introduction that I then became cabin crew as a sort of, you know, I didn't want anything to do with the sport because it was too painful and I couldn't even watch it, you know, on the TV. I couldn't do anything like that. So that process of acceptance and then falling back in love with the game in a different way. I think had I not had those injuries, I think I look at the experiences that I've had since then, and you know, people I've met and roles in coaching. I was never really interested in coaching at all when I was playing. I was never one of those players who, you know, used to help out with some of the younger age groups. All I wanted to do was play. So I had to learn to fall in love with the game in a very different way, from a very different perspective as well, and look at things differently. And I think when you go from being a player and having a certain understanding of the game, and then it comes to kind of developing other players who might not understand something or aren't able to physically or technically or tactically do something, there's a huge level of frustration, I think, in your earlier years as a coach, because you don't accept people for being different to you and accept that they're not you. That was a huge learning curve for me. And again, had I not gone through those injuries, I wouldn't have learnt those skills and developed my understanding in that way. So in some ways, in a twisted way, I'm quite grateful for that adversity that I went through, because it was an awful time. It was painful. It was, and the second time I was away from home, I was by myself over in the States, which was again it was tough. You know, I was 17, 18 and away from home and having to have an operation by myself. So, but again, you know, a lot was learned from it. And I think that's the key thing in all these, you know, within sport, as you know, we'll all go through tons of adversities, no matter whether you're a coach, player, we'll go through something. But it's about taking those learning opportunities out of it that I think is important, that you might not see in the moment. And it's not really until afterwards that you see those opportunities to learn, but it's just important that you do see them in the end.
Yeah, that's an excellent description of your journey. And as you say, taking the learning out of especially those moments we have in our careers that are completely out of our control. It sounds like you went sort of through a second fascination with the sport.
Yeah, massively, because as I say, you know, I'd only ever known playing. I'd only ever known football as a player and nothing else. And I think the time away that I spent, so when I went, you know, as cabin crew and I moved away from home, and I've got some really great memories from that time. You know, I'm still friends with some of those people that I met during that time to this day. But yeah, I had to come away from it. I had to come away from football and away from the sport to sort of then reintroduce myself to it. And it had to be sort of a natural process, I suppose. I had to feel ready. I didn't want to force it. I didn't want to force the opportunity. And I actually had, when I took a step away, I had no intention of even getting back involved at all. And it's just as time went on, the void that was left from football was still there. It's just that I seen it in a different way and it was shaped in a different way. And luckily, because of the, you know, I'd played for Wales, I'd played with various different clubs, so I had a lot of contact still, and you know, wanted advice, and that's something that still to this day, you know, my mentor from when I first started is still my mentor now, and I was quite fortunate to have those links to then, you know, I was she pointed me in the right direction and told me the best way forward, but then also provided me with some, you know, key opportunities just to develop my understanding from not just a coaching perspective, but just kind of the player pathway, looking at it from a coach instead of being that player on that pathway.
Yeah, an interesting shift in perspective, despite it being the same sport, of course. But those experiences, I'm sure, means that there are many aspiring female coaches that look to the likes of you, not least those female students that you'll have on the courses that you oversee. Do you think that the landscape is now changing for female coaches?
Yeah. The landscape has been changing, I think, slowly for a long time. And it's fantastic to see, you know, my work. I'm an external member of staff for the FAW and a coach educator for them. And to see now, you know, I support female-only B licence courses, or, you know, C certificate female game. Certificate courses. So to be able to facilitate those courses, I think just kind of shows where we've come from when it comes to female coaches and the number of female coaches, because there's no way that we would have been able to have done that, you know, years ago, because there wouldn't have been enough to populate those courses. And I think as well, you know, because we've got a lot more females in the game being seen now. You know, we've seen the other day, you know, we had a female referee in an EFL match. And I think it's just having that exposure. So I know lots of players that I've coached over the years, I know they're still playing, but they're involved in coaching. And I think the kind of the value in coaching is also, and the understanding of that value, what a coach brings, has changed as well. Like you said, I didn't want to be a coach. But I think had I understood the value of being a coach, even while I was playing, then I probably would have got involved a lot sooner within my career. And I think that's what's important. And that's what I want to share with young players as well, is having that, the skill set that it provides you, and how it allows you to communicate a lot more effectively. And, you know, you can effectively develop players for the future as well, which I think is important. But the landscape is definitely changing. I think as long as we keep going in the same trajectory, then that's great. And I think sometimes we have to remind ourselves of how far we've come, but we're still not quite there yet.
I think you touched on something really interesting there, the perspective coaches and young players coming through, seeing coaching as a meaningful pursuit. You know, for some of us, that's a really natural tendency. Maybe there's more of the educator in us from the get-go. But obviously, players, professional players, have a huge knowledge set that would be extremely valuable in a coaching environment and for the coaching industry, not least female professionals. And being able to see role models, like you mentioned, that referee is so important in that value creation. Well, you mentioned female-only courses. How did that come about and why were they put together?
I mentioned before that my mentor is Nicola Anderson, who works with the FAW. She's the head, she's the female and coach education coordinator for the FAW Trust. So a couple of years ago, I think it came through, I can't give tons of detail around it, but I know it came through UEFA, and UEFA wanted to support the growth of female coach education here in Wales. And we do get, Nick does a fantastic job of growing the coach education aspect from a female game perspective. We do have courses that aren't just female only courses, they're female game. So they are for any individuals that work within the female game, whether they're male or female. To just provide the game is the same, but there's different considerations that you'd need if you're working within the female game, as you would know. So a couple of years ago, UEFA approached Nicola Anderson and wanted to support the work that she was doing, the fantastic work she was doing around that, the growth of coach education, particularly within female coaches. And then that sort of the domino effect happened, I suppose. And we had such an uptake on the first course a couple of years ago, both internationally. We had some international coaches on there in addition to domestic ones. The feedback was brilliant from all involved, and it was such an enjoyable experience. Even for us as coach educators, you know, it's a tough course sometimes, particularly when it's if it's across a week, which some of these domestic courses are, they can be very long days and very tiring. But it was such an enjoyable experience just from an education perspective as well. And we're looking to run one again this summer, all being well.
Oh, great. I do remember being in Wales when the first ones were being rolled out. And I remember speaking to I was taking a female college team at USW, University of South Wales, at the time. And I remember asking quite a few of the players, would they consider it? Would they consider taking the course? Would they consider becoming a coach? And being quite surprised at how few of them saw themselves as having even potentially the skill set to become an effective coach, despite the fact that I would have identified at least half of them as being good quality coaches later down the line. I wonder if that would be the same with the players that I have now. I'll have to ask them as well. Just a shift to higher education then. And when I looked into taking my bachelor's in football coaching, I'd been in the US for a couple of years and decided I wanted to take it all a little bit more seriously, become a bit more credible. There were only really two or three options for football coaching degrees. USW was one of those, Chichester was another, and I believe there was a BA running at Southampton, which was quite a different style of course. These have blown up. There's football coaching courses, degrees, I should say, appearing all over the place. Why do you think that is?
The landscape of career opportunities has changed. I think individuals who kind of want to study on a football degree now see the opportunity that they have to kind of foster a career in that industry. I think the number of jobs as well, as much as it is, it's a hugely competitive world. It's hugely competitive in terms of jobs. But in terms of the scope and the different roles and different career paths that are associated to that industry, I think is so important. And that's what's important, that individuals understand that, you know, you, as much as it is, it's specific to one sport, you know, it's the biggest sport in the world, and the amount of job opportunities and the amount of disciplines and all kinds of stuff that's associated to that sport Whether you want to be in, you know, more of a formal version of football or an informal, you know, where you want to do more around fitness and well-being, health and well-being, mental health. There are so many different career avenues that you can kind of venture down. And I think that's, I suppose, HE sort of mirrors that and mirrors the uptake of the interest of such courses. You know, these universities wouldn't put the courses together or degree programs together if there wasn't a market there for it. So I think that's just where it's come from, really, in the growth of the sport. And also, you know, you just need to look at football and the investment in sports science over the past, you know, you look at the past 10 years and how much more sports science is valued within the game, whether that's from a sports psychology perspective, S&C, performance analysis, whatever it is. That now, and I think, you know, the industry itself and individuals within it understand the value of that and how that can make the difference. You can have players who are technically and tactically so proficient, but what makes the difference is the scientific support around them. And I think that's also what's had a knock-on effect to then the creation of these various degree programs across the UK.
Yeah, I think there is an important point to make there that my experience, although it's been quite small in terms of dealing with a multidisciplinary team, has been that those who have engaged in football coaching to some degree, whether that is they've literally been out and done it themselves and then they've turned to a slightly different career path, or they've taken national governing body pathway courses, the more understanding they have of your job as a football coach, the far better your connection with performance analysts, strength and conditioning coaches, because they get it.
And I think this is what, you know, as much as I say about career paths, you know, you might not want to work as a sports psychologist within football, but if you're a coach that understands some of the psychological considerations of a player and understands different ways to maybe motivate players, how to reduce anxiety or reshape anxiety or arousal, all those different things that you kind of learn within sports psychology. If you've got an understanding of that and the application, how that looks in the real world, that will only make you a better coach. In addition to vice versa, you know, if you've got an analyst who understands the role of a football coach, who understands sort of animations of play, how to pick those pictures out, how to understand the demands both across psychological demands, physiological demands, that will only help that individual when it comes to the application of their discipline within the game as well. I think that holistic view, we can't all have the same balanced sort of understanding of each discipline, but I think just having a bit of that understanding is only a good thing when it comes to the application of whatever it is that you're looking to apply, whether it's coaching, whether it's psychology, performance analysis, physiology, whatever it is, that'll only be a good thing.
No, I mean, I agree, but these things are covered in UEFA courses. The higher up you go, those licenses. So my although I'm very much on board with the higher education pathway and the importance of it for sports coaches in general, never mind just football, you can see why some people would say, well, why do we need higher education as well?
And I think that's a fair comment. And I think it all depends, you know, as much as I'm a senior lecturer and as much as I live in the world of academia, you know, from within my role, I'm not someone who thinks that, you know, everyone should have a university degree, because I understand the value in vocational courses, other means of gaining that experience, you know, apprenticeship schemes. I do value, as on a personal level, I value all those types of education. When it comes to, you know, if we talk about my programs, football specific, and we look at sports science, yes, you know, you're completely correct in that a lot of those scientific disciplines, I wouldn't say they're covered, but they are touched upon on those courses. And I think where courses like the one that, you know, I lead, the depth and the detail around those scientific disciplines, as much as we cover them holistically and we look at how they look, you know, what they look like within the football industry, it's also important that we look at them individually, you know, within their disciplines and the value of what those disciplines are. And I think that's something that you wouldn't get, or, you know, I'm an experienced coach educator, so I understand the content of the coach education courses. And in terms of looking at that discipline in an isolated format, I don't think that's, you wouldn't get that on a coach education course per se. You'd look at that discipline more of an applied method within that context of football. But sometimes it's about looking at broader than that, looking at that discipline in a more, instead of looking at it in football, we look at it across the board, and you look at it in an isolated way and what it means and what would it look like in other contexts outside of football. And I think that's where the value is as well.
Yeah, that's a fair answer. I mean, do you think we would start to see even more, because I know it does happen, but even more integration between higher education institutions and coach education pathways?
Yeah, I think that's sort of the way it's going, based on some of the knowledge and conversations that I have with individuals in both industries. I think because knowledge within the game is, because, you know, the coach education courses are becoming much more detailed and much more theoretically underpinned. So I think it's only natural that that will be sort of a domino effect in terms of the growth of those aspects. I know the application of, obviously, the true value of it all is then the application and what that looks like on the pitch. So I think as long as there's always a healthy balance between the two, and that goes for academia and HE degree programs as well, that's something that we value a lot, is making sure that there is a healthy balance between theory and practical. And as long as that remains, what I would probably expect, or what I currently know, is that the shift on coach education courses is slightly different to degree programs, which is what you'd expect. Whether that will change in terms of that balance, I'm not so sure, but I know there is more of a drive to broaden the knowledge of those, kind of accessing those coach education courses.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I mean, I'm conducting a review at the moment of some of the academic literature around this, and one of the things that has come up quite regularly is a resistance to theoretical underpinning, or an anti-intellectualism is sometimes the term that's used, from national governing body coach educators, or indeed the program itself, to its integration with the program. And I suspect it's exactly as you're saying, that perhaps there hasn't been enough of a connection of, this is what that theory actually means in practice.
And I think that's the key thing, is how you shape it. It's the same goes, you know, when we're looking to communicate this theory, any kind of theory or something more academic to the students. For me, it's so important that you shape and paint the picture of what that actually means on the pitch, or what that means in the real world. And I would, you know, argue that that's what needs to be done to governing bodies, is if they are pulling back and not wanting to, because the key thing is as well, is we have to understand the demographic of the individuals that are accessing these courses. So you don't want to, you want it to be an enjoyable, fulfilling experience for all, you know, for everyone on that course. So it is all about, like you say, how you shape that theory, how you make that understood, and then how you paint that picture of what that then looks like and the meaning of it within the applied world.
And is that the main challenge to connecting with your students' coach development at higher education institution?
I wouldn't say it's a challenge. I'd say that's sort of a driver for us. I think bridging the gap between, you know, academia and application is something that all academics, particularly within fields like sport and football, that's what we should all strive for, because as much as there is a time and a place, and obviously we value research, and it's so important that that research is conducted, it's also so important that that link is there to the real world, because otherwise, for me anyway, and this is my own opinion, that it becomes redundant. If it won't affect me or my players or my environment, then you don't need to tell me about it, because it has no place for me. So I think it's just making sure that you constantly bring that back to the application and what this looks like in the real world and the meaning of it, whether it's the environment, whether it's the individual, whether it's the coach, whatever it might be, there has to be a link back to practice.
So if you're putting together a course, you know, a bachelor's degree in this case, where your students are getting exposure to some of these different aspects of coaching, some of these different aspects of working within a football coaching club or organization. So we've touched on sports psychology, strength and conditioning, and so on. How does the course in its entirety help the students to make those connections back to their practical life?
So the way in which we looked at, obviously, given the current circumstances, it's been a bit different this year. Yeah. But what we would look to always do is to provide, if it's something, you know, if it's something pedagogical, then we would always have a practical. We'd cover the theory. The way in which we shape or structure the curriculum, we always try as academics and as practitioners ourselves to paint that picture in a practical format. Or whether that's and that could be shaped in all kinds of different ways, and we try to be as innovative as we can be with that. We, you know, it's very rare that we would do a 2-hour block of pure theory talking at a student. It's about creating that dialogue, creating discussion, and creating a bit of a debate at times as well, because sometimes that's the beauty of some of these disciplines, and it's, they're not always as black and white as some are, you know, some if it's data driven. And but it's about creating that dialogue and helping the students shape their own vision and understanding of how that would look in their environment. So when we're looking to communicate with students, or even if it's, you know, if I'm running a coach education course, it's important that what we're talking about, it's important we support them in then applying it or understanding it within the environment that they're in. We've got students who work in grassroots football, we've got students who are more performance, who work as analysts, we've got students who work in elite, you know, senior football. So it's so important. And I think if I had a classroom of 100 students, it'd be a bit different to manage. It might be a case of changing the structure of how we would do it, but that dialogue is so important, and having that sort of critical discussion, but then also supporting them, because if it's something that they've not ever encountered before, it's so important we help shape how that discipline or concept or theory, how that would then look in the environment that they're in.
Sounds great. And it's centering the learner in the process. It sounds like you're employing learner-centered approaches. And one of the common issues that comes up for coach developers in employing those approaches is the amount of resources that takes and how time consuming it can be. So you just spoke about there of, you know, we could get 100 students together and cover all of this detail in one hit, or probably in order to align with, you know, the philosophy of what we're doing here, we're probably going to have to split that up into 3, 4, maybe even more. So how does a university with the resources that you have manage that when doing it in this way clearly is more resource dependent?
Yeah, I think it's all about having that shared ethos as a staff team first and foremost, and having the support of the network around you within your university. You know, I'm very fortunate to work in a smaller institution, but that has such a close-knit community when it comes to their staff. And within our sport team as well, you know, with all my colleagues, we do share, we all have the same value in that, what you've just said around making sure that it's not about, it's never a one size fits all. It never is, you know, when you're looking to develop players, develop coaches, it's never a one size fits all. And it's exactly the same as students. Yes, it's more difficult at times to manage because of time, because of all the other things that would affect, you know, if you're working in club football, so the same difficulties would apply there. It's just all about working together collaboratively, using the time you've got available, using your, you know, in our university, we really value our tutorial system. Having those one-on-one meetings, a lot of the time it's not about quantity, sometimes it's about quality. So penciling in maybe an hour with a student instead of having, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes here and there. And a lot of the time it's dictated sometimes by the students in terms of their needs. There's some students that I don't need to have all those conversations with. It might be one conversation and they get it, or they might work in a particular football environment where it's sort of clearer and easier for them to apply whatever concept it is we've discussed, whereas others is a bit more difficult. But I suppose I just employ the same sort of ethos and outlook like I do with when I work with players. You know, it is, I am quite player-centered, and, you know, like I'm student-centered, but there is a line, I suppose, with managing that. And it can be difficult, and I have no black and white answers, or I have nothing that I can categorically tell you that this is how I do it, because it is kind of subjective and it is based on the relationships and the rapport that I have with each individual student.
Yeah, it's an excellent answer. I suspect that with the learner-centered approaches to teaching, at least within the, I should be careful here, at least within the coach education space, that what we seem to be finding is that somewhere across the continuum, and being able to reflexively move across that continuum as a coach developer is largely going to be the right way to approach it, based on our knowledge of the individual learner, as you mentioned there. So have there been any really innovative approaches to coach development within your environment, or are you expecting to see any changes in the way that we go about it?
Again, you know, this is my opinion and my experience, something that I value and I have seen as a valuable tool, and it's not something new and it's not something that hasn't been done for many years, but I think because of the growth of an interest in performance analysis, I think from a coach development perspective, I think the shift from using that discipline, from, you know, using it for players to using it for coaches, I think has been such a huge thing in terms of developing, you know, coach development. We know that what the tool is like and the value of it when it comes to developing our players, but I think using the same sort of format and the same tool to then develop coaches, I think is something really valuable. And that's something both with the FAW and on the degree program we look to use a lot. And I think the key thing around that, I think, is then developing the understanding of how to use those tools, and then also the communication that needs to support that system that you put together. So something, you know, the conversations and the communication that you have maybe with a coach when using that footage, I think, is the key thing and the key driver of then how you look to develop, how you help them to spot those things that they're looking for. And the questions you might ask. So, you know, Socratic questioning is something that I use a lot within my practice, and trying to guide individuals. And I think that's the key thing. I think it's not necessarily innovative, but I think that from a value perspective, that tool, I don't think, or in my opinion, that there's anything else more valuable than having the resources to be able to, you know, mic a coach up and film them. And even if it's something a bit unstructured where you just watch the session back with them and you have that communication, that discussion, so you understand where they, you know, their understanding and their thoughts behind it, but then you can almost ask particular questions and help guide them to better practice. Or you could have, you know, more of a formal structured conversation around it. But I think that for me, I think at this particular moment in my career, nothing beats that, both as a coach educator and also as a if I was being mentored and developed, I know that's something that I value as well.
That's interesting. That, I mean, in my own course, we went through, you know, systematic observation instruments, coach behavior analysis. And I think it's important what you said there, that it doesn't have to just be that way where we're getting really observable statistics, that actually there's an awful lot of value through video feedback, through your own reflective practice, through doing reflective practice with another, maybe a more knowledgeable other, maybe a peer.
I think that's the key thing. I think sometimes, particularly in coach education, I think we, you know, we may do a module on reflective practice and this is why you do it, this is how you do it. But sometimes I think having that other person there to help guide, I think, is the key. It is huge. And, you know, I've worked with students and coaches who have, you know, done the level one or done the level two. They're not necessarily been B licensed, A licensed coaches. Even just having that kind of opportunity to watch themselves back, which some of them have never done before. And then the penny drops when you say, you know, your area was too small. And when they were conducting the session, they couldn't see it. But then they take a step back and objectively look at the session, and then they can see that picture. But again, that other person that's with them has to guide them. And that's, I think that's what's important.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's an interesting issue with trying to figure out whether that falls under the role of the coach developer, a coach educator, personal learning coach, mentor. We have all these different terms for it. I'd be interested in your thoughts on this one, because this is one that's been rattling around my head for a while. That if we weren't termed football coaches, if we were, for want of a better phrase, if we were called football practitioners, would the coach developer actually just be called a coach? Because in the teaching space, that's quite common. You know, you get, you know, neophyte teachers, you get inexperienced teachers who are assigned a coach. Not everywhere, but that happens in places. So is part of the problem just the terminology that we've almost got this double up on the word of coach?
Yeah, because I think it's very boxy. Terminology can put you in a box, and sometimes that box doesn't always fit the role or fit the requirements or the responsibilities. For me, I don't get caught up too much on terminology, because I know, you know, I'm a coach, I'm a coach educator, but the skills that I have with each role a lot of the time will cross over. And I think it's a difficult one, really, because, and the difficulty comes when you look at everyone's understanding of what this terminology or what these terms mean or roles mean. That's the understanding that I think is difficult. Practitioner, I think, is something that's being used a lot more now. I think there's a lot more use of the term, you know, a football practitioner. But then again, you know, is that too much of an umbrella term in terms of the different roles and responsibilities within the game? Some people are driven by roles and names and what they're called. But that's sometimes an influencing factor, especially within, you know, within sports specific. You know, if it's in the football industry, you've got your manager, you've got your assistant manager, you've got your first team coach. They're very specific terms in terms of who they are, and then also the power that those roles carry. And when it comes to more, you know, coach developers, coach mentors, I think there's a lot more crossover. And I think for me, you know, some people would call me a mentor. Some people might call me a coach developer. I'm not too sure, but I think it's having that shared understanding that if you are developing a coach or mentoring a coach, I think it's having that shared understanding between you and that individual, that you understand what your role entails and how you're going to help them, and where the line is in terms of how much time, how much effort, all the various tools that you're going to utilize. It's that understanding that's important, and it may have to be a case by case, each individual. But yeah, I don't get caught up too much on terminology, because again, I think things change all the time, and the, you know, meaning of terms change all the time, and you get some keywords that kind of come into fashion, I suppose you could say, and then other words come in. So yeah, I think as long as you understand the purpose of your role and how you're looking to either develop or mentor or educate, whatever it is, and as long as that person receiving that help hopefully fully understands that, then yeah, the terminology shouldn't really matter.
Yeah, perhaps it's framed more by the context of each individual interaction rather than anything else. Sarah, what a great conversation. Thank you so much. I always have a last question, which is, if you could have an audience with one person, who would you choose?
If I could have an audience with one person. Wow. If I could have an audience with one person. It could be, I mean, this could be quite soppy, but if I could have an audience with it's a difficult one really, because I don't have, I look up to a lot of people, many, many people. In terms of an audience, as in asking them questions.
Yeah.
It'd be someone like Pele, or, you know, or someone, it'd be someone who's achieved so much in the game. And it'd be, I would be more inclined to ask someone who's from like a different culture and a different environment and a different era of the game, just to understand sort of pressures and and what the game meant to them and how they got over a lot of adversities and things like that. That's what I'd be interested in.
Not much of a surprise to me then that you're working in academia. that makes sense. Thanks so much for your time today. If anyone wanted to reach out, what would be the best way to do that?
Twitter. So my Twitter handle is at Sarah Hilton, SARAHILTON, or LinkedIn. That would be, I'm pretty good on those things, and I'll help anyone who wants any help.
All right, well, just leaves me to welcome you to the tribe.
Thank you very much.
That's it for episode 8 of season 3, and our thanks to Sarah for joining us and giving us insights, amongst other things, to coach education from a higher education perspective. This week, I announced our first webinar in our new series, which I'll be sharing with you at the end of the month. I'll be talking about my journey and understanding of social and emotional learning in organised sport as a hidden curriculum. I'm excited to get as many people on these webinars as possible, so please do sign up and share with anyone you can. Otherwise, as ever, thanks for being here, and we'll see you again next week.